I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the podcast. This is possibly going to be the greatest podcast this year, which I think means the best out of four podcasts. Jamie is gone. Jamie is sacked. He is fired. No, yeah, he's actually like Jeremy Corbyn. He'll just be suspended for a few weeks and then he'll be back. And the reason is that
he's anti-Semitic.
And he has had a baby. Jamie is in the baby bunker, baby number two. I haven't heard from him, but I'm sure that he is currently covered in piss, puke and poo. Joining me as usual is Matthew Wandless from London. And just down the road, in fact, I'm not sure where Ben lives now, is a man who hasn't been on the podcast for a couple of years, works real life for a film company. In fact, his own film company. It's Benjamin Hilton.
Hello. Hi.
There he is. How are we both?
You're not going to hear from Jamie for 2 years, because that is the reason why I've not been on the podcast for 2 years, because I made the mistake of having a second child. I mean, I had the glorious blessing of a second child.
So yeah, very exciting. And me speaking of piss and puke, I don't suppose either of you watch I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yes, I very much enjoyed watching your good pal Jordan North fall off a cliff, both literally and metaphorically.
Oh my God.
Put money
no,
on.
No, I don't watch I'm a Celebrity. And, where is it happening this year?
In Wales. Oh,
so is it?
Yeah, it's in Wales, in a castle in Wales.
I thought they were still doing it in Australia.
No, they've COVID-ed it.
So that's how much I've watched my friend Jordan North on the TV show so far. I don't actually know that it's not in Australia. I've been planning on catching it up. Jordan is the kind of guy that you'll hate until you love him. He'll cross the North-South divide in different ways, and I predict that he will win this year's.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I'm a Celebrity. So much so that I've put £50 on him winning.
Well, you've got a problem because...
I can't remember the exact odds. I think it works out that I'd win £160, but the odds are now going down because he's already taken over the show.
Nice.
He's so scared of everything that people are just going to keep voting him into these situations. Hearing him scream in a coffin full of snakes was the funniest thing.
Jesus.
I've seen the
funniest thing 2020's.
I mean, Matt, it began with him just when they get off the helicopter at the beginning. He puked on ITV as soon as he got off the helicopter, and they had the full puke shot. Incredible.
I can't believe I don't watch this show.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's got everything.
It's a winner. So yeah, Jordan, worked with Jordan for a few years and you know, he talks to me every so often, but he's a busy Radio 1 presenter now and is far, you know, has left me behind massively. But he's a lovely fella, and what will happen, I think, is, you know, I really do think he might win, because he talks like a Burnley docker if they were docks in Burnley. And people will punish Jordan. They'll keep putting him into the trials and then they'll learn to love him. And it'll be a classic British, like, trample on the peasant until we make him king because he's really earned it. And we can be proud of the fact that he's won. But he's got to beat Mo Farah, so it might be difficult.
Mo Farah's on it. I'm not going to get sucked into talking about this show.
No, you don't want to. It's absolute carnage. Absolute carnage.
Speaking of carnage, meanwhile, I've been watching The Crown Series 4. Have either of you, Matt, we've discussed The Crown before, Matt's out of there, but Ben?
Yes, I am watching it also. I watched about three episodes last night while I was doing something.
Right, and you can see already this, of all the series, this is the one that you know the royals aren't sitting around together and watching arm in arm, giggling.
No, I mean, I'd be surprised if they're one of the 10 people still watching it. But
here we go.
Shots fired.
I mean, gosh, it's boring, isn't it?
What? No, I'm not bored at all. I can't believe how salaciously delicious. I don't know. Go on, tell me why you think it's boring. I think this is so close to the bone. I'm just going. I can't believe what I'm finding out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like the Margaret Thatcher,
isn't it the ultimate show about rich people that aren't likable? But actually, it's the truth as well. So it's even more limited in the kind of dramatic potential than something like Succession.
Oh, I think that's the same. That's also true of Goodfellas or whatever. You know, you're looking at the.
Well, no, because they've been selected because they're an amazing story. This family has been selected because they have a completely untenable position in British society.
Yeah, well, you're voicing one of the siloed views that, of course, is explored in it. It is an extraordinary. I mean, and I think that the thing is that the research that's done into things is that there are extraordinary things that you perhaps do not know about the royal family, and when you watch it, those extraordinary things come out.
No, I'm sure, but it's not touching the void, is it?
It's not touching the void, but.
It's not alive.
I find it gripping. But let's go back to the person who's watched it. Because he was saying, what were you saying, Ben? This is not exciting to you anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the first two series were really good. I really liked them. Like you say, I think we don't know that much. Or maybe, you know, I don't know that much about the royal family, the details of things that happened. And so even in this series, like when you find out little details like, just the sort of shitty things that Charles did in the run-up to the wedding and stuff. Those little moments are like really interesting to find out, but it's amongst such sort of slow-paced sort of navel-gazing drama that I just get bored watching it. The first episode of this new series was very long and boring. And I'm afraid I just found the pace of it. Did you watch that? Have you been watching The Third Day?
No.
With Jude Law.
I'm afraid of it.
On Sky, they did this amazing thing where they had a 14-hour live broadcast of an episode, live performance. And, you know, it's 14 hours long. The pace was unbearably slow. And I watched the whole thing. And it was incredible. But watching Jude Law dig a hole for an hour had more content than the first episode of The Crown season four, I'm afraid.
So harsh. As you know how much work goes into these things.
Oh, like, yeah, I know. It's the most expensive series ever made. But I do. I like it. I admire it. It looks good. It's very pretty, and I find it a bit twee sometimes. You know, it's something weird about it that it's now sort of slightly played for laughs when Thatcher and the Queen are sat together, sort of having bants.
I think that woman, their relationship is fascinating because I wouldn't have thought.
It's fascinating, but
I wouldn't have thought that they would have been so at odds with each other.
Do you find it a bit odd now that with The Crown, it's a bit like, you know, Olivia Colman is doing her The Queen and Gillian Anderson will be doing her Mrs. Thatcher. And well, it's a bit like celebrity casting of impressions.
Well, we're like down to episode 8 or 9 now. And at first, when Gillian Anderson first came on as Thatcher, I said to Sarah, this is the first time that I'm going, someone's in a wig. And,
yep.
You know, but then 8 episodes later or whatever, I am amazed by her, because I think that the problem with Thatcher is that she was such a ridiculous, unusual specimen. Like, she's such an odd person that I genuinely have been watching it and kind of forget that I'm watching an actress, because you realize that is who she was. That is, if she came into a room, she would, you know, this is not an over exaggeration. That's how she behaved, and that's who she was. And I think the more that it gets under the surface of like how much Thatcher did to like quite how much, almost to the levels of Donald Trump at the moment, quite how much she ignored reality and just doubled down on her idea to squeeze the country into profitability or something. I think the series really gets into that. And that stuff is super interesting, that is the only prime minister that the Queen seemingly actively did a press release against.
You know, I've not got to that fact yet.
It's big. And there's other stuff further down. I don't know if you know about the sort of secret royal family, the ones that you haven't heard of and stuff. I'm not going to ruin anything, but this series is like seriously damaging to
it. It is very damning, isn't it? I've got that already, and I'm only sort of 4 episodes in, that it's the one that sort of takes the Crown to task for even existing and being allowed to exist into this modern age.
And there's something at 3 episodes further on than where you are, there is something that they expose that is genuinely unforgivable. You know, everything else that happens, you can kind of go, well, you're doing it for the sake of the line and for the sake of the crown and da, da, da. There is something in their history that they have done that is so unforgivable that there's no way they can watch this and do another press release about the Queen enjoyed watching Netflix tonight.
Which episode is that in? Roughly.
I'll figure it out. It's about
Matt's just going to skip forward.
Skip straight to it.
Yeah. You know, I'm just
going to skip straight
to
that one.
I'm curious what it is.
Yeah. Why not?
Between 8 and 10, I think, is where we are.
Maybe you can tell me after we've...
I'm going to keep watching it. Of course, I'll watch it right through to the end, I would imagine. And I do find it sort of captivating in a way. But it's not one that I like sit down and get mesmerized by. It sort of plays out at its own pace in front of me. Sometimes I, you know, do other things.
Can we move on and talk about a different queen?
Yeah.
The one of the Gambit.
Ah, Queen's Gambit. Let's discuss.
I'm watching it.
Yeah. Oh, nailed it quickly. Loved it. Incredible. And Matthew, why don't you tell us what you think of it?
I watched the first 2 episodes on the recommendation of a friend whose opinion on television I hold in low regard. And she doesn't like anything good. All she watches is fucking cooking programs and reality TV. And whenever I've tried to get her switched onto a good drama, she's always fucking just ignored it. And I've basically given up on her. But I thought, all right, she's actually come to me with a drama that looks credible. Watched the first couple of episodes and I thought it was slow, dull,
Jesus
kind of, just really sort of pedestrian in its kind of storytelling and undeniably beautifully shot, well performed and all these things, but I just found it dull. And I also thought the way they did the chess in the kind of Kentucky things was pretty poor. But then we carried on and from there on, I think it's actually very good. I think that basically I said to Hannah, we were watching it together. I said after the second episode, I said, this show isn't going to get interesting until she loses. And there's something to butt up against, because up until that point, everything had just seemed so fucking straightforward.
Poor Hannah.
No, she agreed with me. And so we persevered, and it's paid off. Yeah. I think it's a much better show now, and I'm interested in it. I'm going to watch the rest of it.
Okay. Production value.
But there was something about, because I'm not a chess expert by any stretch of the word, but my grandpa was very good. He was a Sussex County captain, and
wow,
yeah, you know, ranked and everything. And he taught me how to play when I was little, and I used to go to his chess club sometimes, and that thing of like, there was a moment where she was playing the handsome guy, I can't remember his name, and she kind of does a move and he's like, whoa. And then it was just that thing of like, chess is a very slow boil game.
Yeah.
And they made it seem like a computer game, I thought. But then as it's got better and she's sort of interacting with better players, it's much more faithful to the actual game, I think. And
yeah,
it's got all the other attributes that I mentioned. It's very beautifully shot. And oh, I really
it's like Mad Men in its production values. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
I loved it from the off, and I could have watched. I'm not as good at chess, or I don't know as much about chess, so perhaps I was less bothered about that, and I was more. I didn't need her to win or lose. The character was the thing that I enjoyed right from the beginning. I didn't even need the. I'm really, really, really beyond sick of things that having to start with a flash forward. Fucking hate it. I'm getting more and more annoyed. We don't need to see her in the championships at the beginning. It's like, just go straight in with the car crash, begin there.
It's the legacy of Breaking Bad, that, isn't it?
Yeah. And Breaking Bad did the best ever. So, you know, and even more so for the sake of like, where you really need that, is in network television to sell some, to keep bums on seats, right? Like, is your piece really not that strong enough? Well, I suppose Matt has proved that he was bored for a couple of episodes, so maybe that flash forward keeps the impatient, the people with short attention spans, like Matthew, keeps them hooked. They know that it's going somewhere. They know something's going to happen. The reason that I really, really love Queen's Gambit is that it feels like a true story. One of you said you don't really know which way it's going to go.
Yeah. It feels like it's a true story, doesn't it? Yeah.
There's a genuine like stuff that happens, say a death or a divorce or these things that happen in life. If you were crafting this as a screenplay to start with, it might be that you would, those things would have to have a relevance that was more drawn out, or it was, and these things happen quite quickly. They happen sort of surprisingly, and they might happen over 90 seconds. Something big happens and then you move on with the story. And it really does feel like a biography of how you get from
it does
24 different points. It's great.
But in the same way, the fact that it's not is kind of what made me annoyed by the first couple of episodes, because it felt like they spent an awfully long time on a part of her history, which would be significant were it a true story. But as it wasn't,
that's because it's the novel.
It just felt like it could have been done in one episode rather than two.
I bet you, I haven't read it, but I bet you that the novel spends a lot of time there in a sort of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest type world in that orphanage, and it builds quite an environment.
Yeah, I can imagine it would work in a novel, yeah. But the other thing, I mean, and this is only starting to sort of come to the fore in the point where I am in the series, is that it's starting to feel a bit male-gazy.
Male-gazy? Like
she's suddenly become very sexualized and just sort of seems to be totally fine with having casual sex with a lot of chess nerds. Which
chestnuts.
I can imagine to a chess nerd is quite an appealing idea.
Well, you got to get.
I don't actually know. I mean, I assume this. The book was written by a man. I mean, So that's what I mean. It's just starting to feel a little bit like, is this just now a fantasy kind of thing?
No, I think we've got the coming of age section. It's kind of what if a woman had started with nothing and had seemingly everything: brains, looks, power, a supersonic ability, all of that, and how that person would be viewed by everybody else becomes interesting, I suppose, without giving anything away in terms of the ending. But yeah, it's it just feels so refreshing in that I hate how much I feel like I can predict what's going to happen in things when I watch them now, and you can kind of just work out what the arc's going to be from the beginning. And that's why flash forwards annoy me as well. It just seems so refreshing and great. Anyone got anything to add to Queen's about Gambit there?
I'd like to put it into a bit of one of the things I enjoy about shows is the people behind them. And so I just want to give a quick shout out to Scott Frank, who is the guy who's the showrunner of The Queen's Gambit, whose pedigree is as a screenwriter of things like Logan, which he was nominated for an Oscar for. Yeah, and The Wolverine, and what's on here? Minority Report and Out of Sight. Do you remember Out of Sight?
I remember Out of Sight. Wow, yeah.
Soderbergh film, really great. He wrote that. He also wrote Get Shorty.
Wow. Oh, I love Barry Get Sonnenfeld. Shorty.
Yeah, so he's got like serious chops. Weight, serious chops, and his last TV show was Godless, which
which
was a sort of Western thing, which I didn't get to see, but was very well received.
We started talking about that, Matt. It was who was it, Ben? Was it Jeff Daniels? Jeff Bridges?
Jeff Daniels is in it. Yeah, Jack O'Connell. Michelle Dockery.
Yeah, you really liked it, didn't you? Or Jamie really liked it?
Jamie really liked it, and I think I will like it if I get around to it. I watched the first episode and like your criticism of this. In fact, when I think of Logan as well, he likes a slow start. He likes
Logan's
a slow start. Yeah, but you do spend a lot of time fertilising the field at the beginning, I think.
Building a world there, though.
Building a world. I would say that's what he
and
did.
And
the
book, the book was written by Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler, The Colour of Money, and The Man Who Fell to Earth. So that is
pedigree. And I noticed Scott Frank directed a lot of them as well, didn't he?
Yes, he's really the sort of the guy behind it.
And also always great when somebody has two first names. Always
should
like
we
that.
Talk about what else we're watching? Ben and I, in the little break, we were saying that we've both kind of retreated to the safety of the great TV shows of the late 90s.
Have you? Go on. What are you watching?
I've rewatched. I'm on the start of series 4 of The Sopranos. We've rewatched both. This isn't the late 90s, but we've rewatched both series of Succession. I've watched all of The Wire.
Again, how many times have you done The Wire now?
4, 5.
Wow.
I've started to watch The Wire again out of this sort of need to just, like, you know, wrap a nice blanket around myself through this year and
be comforted
nice
by the,
be comforted.
The death and decimation of mid-90s Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that rewatch The Wire. I've gone back, obviously, rewatching The West Wing, which I do permanently. But I've started again from the first episode. I've watched every film released in 1995. for some reason, that year was absolute gold, and it makes me feel good.
Can I just say something about the comparison? Because I've been watching Sopranos with Han, so that's at a slower pace, like they're only in the evenings. But I've been watching The Wire kind of in my spare time whenever I have 5 minutes on my phone. And The Sopranos and The Wire used to share places 1 and 2 on my sort of top all time. But watching them again, I don't think they're actually, they are in the same league, but they're not very close in it, I don't think. I think The Wire is significantly better than Sopranos as a TV show.
Wow.
The Sopranos doesn't really get going until the end of series two, maybe even series three. That's when it starts to get really fucking good. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say The Sopranos isn't good. The Sopranos is still a wonderful TV show.
Got a theme from Matthew today, which is slow starts.
No, The Wire is the ultimate slow start.
The Wire is the never really starts. It's so slow.
The Wire didn't get going until it was axed. And then
and
everybody went back and went, whoa.
But now, when I'm watching it again, like I think The Wire is a very, very rare beast in the sense that I don't think they waste any time in that show. And I know what you're going to say, Howell, and that you think it's dull at points and stuff. But I think every scene in that show is a little masterpiece of its own. I don't think there is a fault.
I think it's great. I don't think I want to go back. It feels like going back to a traumatic event to watch it again. So I'm not sure if I could return as many times as you did. But I have watched it twice. The second time I remember thinking Dominic West's accent is so much worse than I thought when I first watched it. His English comes through so much more once you know he's English.
I've finished watching Stateless on Netflix. Have you seen that? It's got that's another. Dominic West is one of those guys. He just is in everything if you allow him to be.
Stateless is incredible, and Yvonne Strahovski is in it.
Mm. And he plays a fantastic character in that.
Yeah. That is a brilliant thing to watch if you haven't watched it. I mean, a bit like trying to tell people to watch something about chess. You're watching something essentially about the Australian immigration system, asylum system.
Yeah, it's very niche watch.
Yeah.
But also, in terms of going back to things, I've also just finished watching The Long Way Up on Apple TV.
Me too!
And that has led me to then also watch The Long Way Down and Long Way Round.
Me too.
And that felt very good.
Oh,
that
my
was very comforting. God. I forgot. Comforting. The moment that TV theme comes on, I was like,
get something to say. It's just such a shame they picked Kelly Jones at the beginning and then had to stick with him all the way through. But
I was wondering if now he's recorded every version of the word that it could be. Once they came back and said, can you do The Long Way Up? He was like, why don't we just do like all the different directions that we could do now? The long way east, the long way west. I'll just do them all. We'll just
in case you want to use them. Here's my question.
Yeah, this is going to keep going.
I've got a question for you both, but probably mostly for Ben here. Why, if you film something with that many cameras and for that long, you film a whole month on various GoPros and drones and blah, blah, and they drive from South Africa, southern tip of South America to Los Angeles. You've got so much footage. The point of these TV series, like you've just said, is they are comforting. We actually get to step into almost slow TV and just sit on the road. It's the beauty of it is sitting on the road for hours. Why? Oh, why make only 10 episodes? You could make 25 and just give us, just let us. I mean, nobody's watching this who doesn't want
I could watch
that.
The Long Way Up I could have watched another 10 episodes. And
Why would you compress the whole of Peru into one episode or something? Just let us watch. I'd just listen to them talking to each other on the bike for an hour.
It was, there is definitely the long way cut.
And the point is, who's watching
the longer way up? That's what they should have. They should have a second series,
a
side series, the longer way up,
the longer way around, the longer way up, the longer way.
And that would be, I'd watch that. You're right, it's brilliant. What I find hysterical about The Long Way Up, I really love it, but is that at the end of every episode, they have a sort of fake cliffhanger where they're like, oh, Ewan McGregor's got altitude sickness. And then they're like, then they have a call, somebody call a doctor, somebody get a doctor in. And then there's a doctor running in and Ewan McGregor's like lying on the bed going, I feel really funny, I feel funny.
Cuts
and then
the
start of it cuts the credits. Then you start the next episode and they're on the bike 300 miles later. And Ewan McGregor goes, I got over that pretty quickly. So we're here in Peru. And you're like, whoa, where was the cliffhanger for? And it almost gets predictable to the point where they start making a joke about it.
That is That is my issue, is that, like, the people who object to it, I told mum and dad to watch the first one years and years ago, and they said, and their criticism of it was basically, started watching it, it's two rich guys who can afford a support team to ride on really nice motorbikes and get some free stuff around the world. Why do I care? So, fair enough. They're not going to watch it. They don't want to watch it. Lots of people who either don't like motorbikes or have that opinion won't watch it. Anyone who is watching it don't need the cliffhangers, do want a lot more than they're given.
I enjoy how joyful Ewan McGregor is as well. Just happy to be there all does the it, time.
Does watching it endear you to Ewan McGregor more as an actor? Because he's one of these guys that I really find difficult to watch.
Yeah, you do.
I do wonder if his recent, if his, it is also slightly geared towards his recent PR issues, which are sort of...
Divorce, you mean?
Not mentioned.
They're not mentioned, and all of a sudden they meet their families, and he's kissing his co-star from Fargo. Oh!
Well, I think you'll find that sentence is the reason for the divorce. But it's
I didn't realise that happened.
Okay. Oh, really? Yes. Yeah, there's been all kinds of tabloidy shenanigans going on.
Also, you meet his daughter.
It's beneath me, Ben. It's beneath me.
Yeah, and I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's beneath Ewan McGregor.
I absolutely love the guy.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I don't know anybody who could possibly meet him and not love it. You know, he just seems... He's a superstar. He's a really nice guy, but he's obviously a superstar. He has his... you never hear him do interviews. He seems to lock himself off. He's very, you know, well-controlled in terms of his public image. But on those things, whenever he... You know, there's scenes where Ewan McGregor will be just walking into a hotel. It's just filmed from the bike. And he'll, like, open the door for a tourist to walk through. And there's... like 10 people just walk through this door while he stands and opens it for them and watches them all through and then follows them through. And in another scene, that would happen, but someone would notice it's Ewan McGregor, and what would start is like a 2,000-person crowd asking for selfies with Obi-Wan Kenobi. It just seems...
It's very endearing.
A very endearing person, yeah. And Charlie Borman...
Yeah, it's a great, enjoyable watch. Very enjoyable watch. I didn't want it to end.
And I've never seen any of them.
Oh, so
just maybe I should watch The Long Way Down.
Yeah. I think you'd enjoy it. If you start with The Long Way Around,
that's what I meant,
yeah, that's beautiful. Great. The Long Way Down, it becomes between the two, Ewan McGregor has become a huge superstar. And there's also a lot of issues with their family comes on the trip and stuff.
It's problematic.
And then clearly they sort of didn't really, you know, speak much after that, and and then they've decided to get back for this one 10 years later, and it's nice. They're all, but I've just rewatched all of them, and they are all really enjoyable, especially at the moment where nobody can travel. It is really nice to see out that open road.
Is it going to be the thing that tips me over from teetering on the edge of getting my
motorbike
CBT and actually going and just getting a license and buying a motorcycle?
I think it will. They're on
some comprehensive basic training or something like that.
They're on
also cock and ball torture, so you know, depending on which one you get when you Google it,
just,
you know,
just tells you a lot about your search history. They're on electric bikes on the new series, and that has made me think a lot about electric bikes.
Do you have a bike, Ben?
No, I bought my wife. My wife's got a moped. She's got a...
Okay. Whoa.
She's dangerous. Got a Vespa. She's got a Vespa. She's got a Millennium Vespa. Which
so
I bought
dangerous.
Last year.
I mean, essentially, Matt, by getting on a bike, you're something like 90% more likely to have a road traffic accident than not getting
on. Yeah, I know. But my dad used to ride motorcycles, never had an accident, drove really safely, did all the police driving courses and
It's not him. And my brother. When your dad was driving, there was less traffic on the road, probably.
This was like 10 years ago. My brother-in-law's just got... He got a bike last year, and every time I see it, I'm like, I want one of those.
Yeah, I have to admit, it has made me... I don't like... I'm not bothered about stuff like that, but the Long Way series makes me understand it.
Quick, I've always had a romantic vision of driving across the States, and if it's on a bike,
oh, you have to watch this show
more...
then. If you've got a romantic vision, Matt, of that, you have to watch this. I think right up your alley.
What you're currently getting from The Wire in terms of solace and comfort and escape, this is another. It's a different side of the coin, but it's the same thing.
It's extremely uncynical as well. It's extremely comfortable watching.
Good for Matt, you mean? You're prescribing that for Matt specifically.
I have a bit of cynicism. Yeah. What about anything current? What
the new Aaron Sorkin film?
Oh, you watched the good Chicago 7.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot.
Nice. It's like a 7, isn't it? It's like a 6.57 out of 10. It's not an amazing film.
But always nice to see Sorkin doing his thing, and he directed this one. And there's a few bits that are over directed, like in the court. There was some like real jump cuts for like 10 minutes or something. And I was like, I'm not sure what. Yeah, he's quite an enthusiastic man, isn't he? Can go a bit quick sometimes, which works better in the writing than directing. But it was really good. I enjoyed that a lot.
I'm sure you've covered. I've very much enjoyed Perry Mason.
Oh yeah.
And Gangs of London. I think those are two incredibly violent TV shows that, but very cinematic TV shows.
I haven't seen Gangs of London.
Either of these. What's Perry Mason?
What's Perry Mason?
We talked about that in the last one, didn't we?
Is this the old Perry Mason?
No. It's the reboot of the old Perry Mason.
Matthew Rhys. Produced by
Matthew Rhys of the Americans fame, and John Lithgow, in a sort of 1930s, really dark detective, gritty detective series that's currently on Sky and Now TV.
Yeah,
all right, I'll give that a glance.
Get it?
It's a HBO show. It's very good. It's got a beautiful soundtrack. And yes. Matthew Rhys is absolutely captivating. Also, it just really sets up what could be a very long-running character if you just go.
Well, that's cool. We're only a couple of episodes from the end of Queen's Gambit, so we do need something new.
I mean, it's pretty violent. It's not anywhere near as violent as Gangs of London, but it's pretty. It's got some gruesome.
The violent moments are disgustingly violent.
Dark. It's dark. Dark.
Really violent. They're like Game of Thrones stamping on head type moments when they go for it. They go for it. Good. I found it, like, I loved it. I found it to be, I think that you'll find it slow for the first two or three, because you kind of, I don't know if you ever watched any of the original Perry Mason, it couldn't be further from that in terms of like pace. Oh, right. Well, you're probably all right then. But it puts us,
just,
I mean.
To clarify, I don't object to slow paced things. I just want
substantive
in their slow pacing. I want there to be a reason for it.
Well, I feel like with this one.
I feel like sitting down and making you watch the 14-hour episode of The Third Day would be a really interesting.
The only reason I haven't watched The Third Day is because I'm scared of it. People told me it was scary, and I'm not good with scary. But because I really like Jude Law, I think he's great.
How often? I mean, presumably you choose the length of your episodes with that, Ben. You didn't watch it in a wanna.
No, it was. Sorry, I should probably clarify. The Third Day is, I think it's a six-part TV, one-hour TV show.
They did a special.
They did a special episode. It was supposed to be that, because it's all set on an island off the coast of the south of England, and it was supposed to be that Punch Drunk, who are the production company who've made it, they also specialise in immersive theatre, where, you know, an audience goes and walks around a big space and has a sort of play done for them, to be reductive. But everybody was supposed to go to this island. Like 10,000 people was, you know, had bought tickets to go to this island and experience the sort of a live version of the six-part TV show sort of playing out, and they could walk around the island and stuff like that. But obviously because of COVID, that couldn't happen. So what they did was they live broadcast a single shot show following... real time Jude Law playing out this story. And so it was broadcast, and it was just a single count, a single shot, no cuts of just the camera floating around this island, going into various scenes, out of various scenes.
Wow.
And Jude Law basically endures I don't want to ruin the first 6 hours for anyone, but he basically endures a crucifixion. And it's really, it's like The Wicker Man, but 14 hours long.
Wow.
And it was very, it was a very creepy day. It was on a Saturday. They broadcast it live on a Saturday, and it was actually happening while they were doing it. And
will they have time?
It was amazing. It was my favorite thing this year.
And when you say it flew in and out of scenes, does that mean that they'll leave Jude for like 7 minutes so that he can have a poo halfway through?
They drift off for an hour, and then you spend like 40 minutes watching somebody tidying up a campsite.
So he'll have got to go to the toilet. They'll have built in toilet breaks for Jude.
I think there was toilet facilities available for pretty much everyone.
Good, good.
There was some on-camera toilet facilities, some not.
Really?
It was very immersive, and it was great for a lockdown Saturday because it was very scary and very ominous.
And can you rewatch that?
No, it was a one-off moment, but they've done like a three-hour long cut of it that's now on Now TV, and you can watch that. And honestly, I was absolutely gripped by it the whole time. You sort of couldn't look away. Even watching Jude Law drag a boat on a rope for 4 miles was, you know, I don't know, there was something like mesmerizing about it. It was like the ultimate in slow telly. If we're talking about slow starts, that was just like the slowest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah. Well, good one, Jude. I mean, it got him out of the house.
It's gonna, if he didn't win an Emmy for that, I mean, it was pretty intense.
Incredible.
Pretty intense. It looked incredibly demanding.
Wow.
Guys, I've got to head out.
All right, enjoy The Crown. And
I will not be watching The Crown, but I will just say I've been watching lots of Atlanta, which I thoroughly recommend. Been finally caught up on that. Kind of an amazing show, actually. How have you seen it?
Atlanta, no.
Get on it. It's on iPlayer.
I've watched the first series. Yeah, it's very good.
Do it. Second series, man. The second series goes crazy.
Okay.
there's some weird shit happens in that show. I love it. It's totally not what I expected it to be, and I guess what I expected it to be was just like a long running story drama, like a conventional one. But it's almost like an anthology series. But the way it's become in series two,
right?
Broad City. If you haven't seen any of that, have a look. Comedy set in New York with kind of two women. It's very improvisational.
Nicole Kidman?
That's the one I was going to ask about, The Undoing. Is anyone watching that?
Yes. Because they're releasing that week by week, so I'm 3 episodes into that.
Is it good?
Small Axe started this week as well.
All right.
That's very much worth watching. Steve McQueen's BBC One TV series is excellent.
And last one, Mandalorian.
Yeah, enjoying it. It's got my criticisms. We should discuss it another time.
I don't really care about what you think, Howell. I'd be more asking about Ben, because...
yes, I mean, look.
Ben's a true Star Wars fan, so...
Yes, I really enjoy The Mandalorian. It's
good.
I don't get to binge watch it because I think it's pretty geek territory, if I'm really honest.
There's some terrible direction of actors going on in this series.
There's some great directors. I mean,
great direction, terrible direction of actors. Like they've literally.
Were you on set? Are you like? Do you know this? Are you just
I was
the actors have called you and said, "Howell, this guy is."
I was there.
She's fucking me up.
I saw them. They spent so long.
She's giving me line readings. She's
setting up. They didn't even do that. They didn't give me anything. They just sort of went, right, off you go. We've spent all day setting up the set, and it's really important. We've got all the reference points. The cinematography is amazing. Everything's amazing. Now, if you just pop that helmet on and waddle through the door, that'll work. And that's that. So when you
Who's your source? Can you tell us who your source is from the
set? It's my good friend. Im from Narcos.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, we'll discuss it another time, but...
Matt, it's a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Matt,
I had no hope for it. And
this actually, The Mandalorian is really worth talking about because it's changed how TV production and film production is going to happen for the future. The way it's made is incredibly interesting. Shit. Maybe only to me.
I really want to hear about this, and now
about how it's filmed is definitely another conversation.
We'll carry on talking, and Matt can listen to the podcast and hear it. Matt, episode 7 is called The Hereditary Principle. That's the answer to your question earlier.
The Crown. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll watch it. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Bye, chaps.
See you later.
Nice to talk to you both.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye-bye. Ben, why don't you tell me in 1 minute how The Mandalorian is revolutionary?
So it's revolutionary because on the shoot for Rogue One, Greg Fraser, the cinematographer, started to work with in studios using giant LED screens as backdrops. So when you're, and then you can put anything you like onto these giant LED screens and then film an actor in front of them, and it looks like they're in wherever you want to put, whatever you want to put on these giant LED screens. And it's slightly more complex than that, but that's the thing
what they're doing this.
And that's so Greg Fraser's then gone on to shoot The Mandalorian, and he's, you know, mounted it largely on these what call the LED volume stages. And what it allows is that really beautiful sunlight, like that sort of goldeny, you know, dusk sunlight that is throughout The Mandalorian. Yeah. That only occurs in, you know, in life for like an hour or so every day. So it's like, you know, shooting that
golden hour.
Those magic hour moments, you don't get them very often and they're always really special. But what these LED screens allow to do is create this really, really believable golden hour all day. Which is why it looks absolutely stunning and sort of shares a lot.
It's
of
better than a green screen because
LED throws light. So an LED is a light. So it's lighting the actor as well and the space as well as providing a visual image.
Which is the same thing as in real life because light, the reason you see things is light refracts.
In a green screen you put a backdrop in but then you've got to light it to match. This is a real-time moving light, you know, that changes with the background image. So it's been rolled out to all kinds of things are being shot on it now, and it means you can shoot, you know, in a very controlled environment and make things look absolutely stunning. It's really good.
Fantastic. Well, fascinating, and you've really earned your pay today on this podcast, so thank you very much. and apologies if my mic has been at all clinky today. My wife is working in our office, and I am sitting on a beanbag with my microphone trapped between the computer and my chest, so there's probably been some good beanbag noises going on.
I did wonder what the little beanbag noise was.
If you want to email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com, as ever, tell us what your lockdown box set is, and we'll talk to you again soon, hopefully with less of a break than we have been lately. But without Jamie, it should be an easier operation. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.